Para-X Radio, your source for everything paranormal and beyond.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and its guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X Radio Network, its affiliates, its sponsors, or Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Paranormal Encounters podcast series is educational, entertaining, and intriguing. Be careful what you wish for.
Careful what you wish for. Ever get that feeling that something might be hanging around?
Good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. The producer and host of this series is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. She will be joining you shortly. Before we meet Dr. Schutz, let me give you some background about her. She is a published author and academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast, who holds 4 advanced degrees in the area of higher education and applied communications, with a secondary interest in parapsychology and life-after-death issues. Dr. Schutz travels to haunted locations all over the United States and Europe, seeking out situations to investigate. A sensitive intuitive, Dr. Schutz has had numerous experiences with the paranormal since the age of 9, with her most frightening and recent experience being an oval-shaped floor-length mirror cycling around in front of her in a haunted room she had stayed in. She has photographed apparitions in a screened window, been kicked up into the air, been sat on, choked, put into a trance, attacked, and continuously sought out by the unknown who want to share a message with her. From her personal experiences and in interviewing others, she has written nearly 100 illustrated stories in her book series entitled Paranormal Encounters. The Paranormal Encounters podcast series will initiate with Dr. Schutz first discussing a variety of interesting topics, as well as her personal experiences that will evolve into other segments for your interest, enjoyment, and education. Each podcast episode will be approximately 45 minutes long. Dr. Schutz welcomes your questions and comments. How to contact her or ways to order her books will be mentioned at the end of this podcast.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Hello, everyone, and thank you again for joining me for another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series as published by Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Tonight, the moment we have all been waiting for, and I mean waiting for. It has taken me 1 year to get this woman in front of this microphone, and I am absolutely overjoyed. In fact, I'm hoping that by the time I get this interview done with tonight, That we will also have a second interview regarding both she and I and our paranormal experiences, because I think you're going to find that to be as wonderful as this interview is going to be this evening. So tonight I'm interviewing a woman by the name of Carmen, and I met Carmen at a summer job that we have been doing now for the last couple years. And it just so happens that last year, you might remember me bringing up that I had worked at the Minnesota State Fair and met this woman there, and that we had a few paranormal experiences together there. But for this episode this evening, I would like to start out by talking to her about her mother. And her mother is what I believe is to be a Holocaust survivor. And I think that story in and of itself is very, very important to relay, and just to understand what it might have been like, not only as she was growing up, but hearing the stories of her mother as she was growing up. So, sit back, grab that basket of popcorn. I said a basket. And let's have a good interview tonight with Carmen. So, Carmen, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me, Kelly.
So, Carmen, I thought that one of the things that was really, really interesting is when you're talking about your mother still being alive and being a Holocaust survivor, you know, there's not really too many Holocaust survivors, I believe, still around. So I thought maybe we would share with the world through your eyes and your ears, and of course, your mother is very, very active still, some of the occurrences of how it was for her when she was growing up, and kind of give people a bird's eye view of this very important moment, and also a part of moment that has changed history. So why don't we start here with a little bit about, can you tell us a little bit about the age of your mother when all of this just kind of started to occur?
Well, my mom was born in Riga, Latvia. And as a small baby, her dad happened to be killed in a car accident. Her mother was very devastated over the death of her very young husband and became very depressed, started drinking a lot. And my great-grandma actually decided what was best for the child is that she would raise my mother. And so my mother's grandma raised her. My grandma was both German and Norwegian. We don't know too much about it because my mom has only decided to tell us some of these things as of lately. My mom is 89.
89, wow, that is quite a feat. And what year, do you remember approximately what year all of this was? Did this happen in your grandmother's lifetime, or did this Holocaust, did that also affect your mother as well?
It affected both. My mom was born in 1930. Times were difficult in Europe. I believe the reason that my great-grandmother went to Riga, Latvia, is because there was work there. There wasn't much work in the Black Forest area of Germany. My grandma took her family and they went to Riga, Latvia, and then they left Riga, Latvia, and all I know is that at the time they were very anti-Semitic there, and they are to this day. But it was never clarified or known by my mom whether she was part Jewish or not. But they moved to Russia. And in Russia, I believe it was in the Moscow and St. Petersburg area where they lived in a very nice apartment. And all of a sudden, when my mom was 9 years old, the Bolsheviks came through, took over their apartment, told them they had to leave, and so my mom and her grandmother and my two aunts had to just walk out the door with the clothing on their back and leave Russia. They ended up in Warsaw, Poland for a short time, and then eventually they went to the Bavarian region of Freiburg, Germany. And at that time, my mom and grandma had actually lived in a farming community, and my grandmother married a farmer there who also had a horse ranch, and he took very good care of my great-grandmother and her grandchild, and then the two aunts.
Okay, let me back up for a second with you here. So in 1930, that was approximately when your mother was born, and up until the age of 9 years old. So when, I don't even know how to say this, Bolsheviks, is that what you said?
Yes.
When they came in and they asked and ordered everybody to leave their homestead, of course, was there a war going on at the time? Was this the beginning of the Holocaust or the war between the countries? Because if they left and they didn't have anything basically but the shirts on their backs, how did they get from one place to another safely at that point before things started to get worse? Do you remember?
Well, this was 1939 when they were ousted out of their home. Mm-hmm. And I'm not quite sure how they got there, but they had different relatives in different areas. And I know in Warsaw, Poland is where my mom's great uncle lived. Mm-hmm. Or actually, it was her uncle, my great uncle. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure that either they somehow sent the money for the transportation on the train, but he owned Cafe Müller in Warsaw, Poland, and so that's where they headed first. And that uncle was married to a very nice woman, and I remember my mom saying that they loved going there and being there, and she loved her uncle. And eventually, again, they had to go somewhere where there was jobs available. Mm-hmm. And so that's how they ended up in Germany.
And so that's, okay. So when they arrived in Germany and they ended up there, were they able to find safely a few jobs? And did that give them peace of mind, at least temporarily for the moment?
Yes. Actually, they ended up working on the farms mm-hmm. in that area. Mm-hmm. Grandma was an excellent cook, so she became the cook of that family. And then my mom mentioned that this farm family had some teenage children, and they were very nice to her, especially one of the boys. And he taught her how to milk cows. He taught her how to brush and groom horses. And she actually rode horses. And I never knew why my mom had such a love for horses. And this only came about in the last 3-4 years that she heard I was going to the horse barn and was delighted. And then she told me this story.
And when Carmen's talking about the horse barn, this is where I met Carmen last year at the Minnesota State Fair, and how I ended up in the horse barn, by the way, working there, was they were looking for, I don't want to use aged as a word here too, but pretty much older adults to work in the office at the horse barn during the fair, because they needed that sort of demeanor of the older type of individual to be able to work with a lot of the exhibitors that were there. So when she said, when I ended up in the horse barn, she's talking about the very place where I also captured a lot of paranormal activity last year during the midnight hours, where she worked the daylight hours pretty much into the evening. So okay, so then at the point that they're working on this farm in Germany, it sounds like to me, when did things start to all of a sudden become a little bit more unsettled?
I would say, I believe, and I'm not very accurate with this, but all of a sudden the Nazi movement began. And I don't have the exact day of when the war ended, but my grandmother feared for her grandchild because my mom had very dark jet black hair, dark eyes, and she said they're going to all think she's Jewish. And so my grandmother basically walked her to school all day, every day. And my mother went to a Catholic school, and it was run by nuns. And it started hearing bombing in the area.
Oh, interesting.
And she said it was so scary. People here do not know what it's like to be a child growing up where you hear bombing every day, where you fear walking to school. And on top of that, my grandmother was hiding some Jewish children because she was very good-hearted, and so was this farmer. They fed them every day. And one day when my mom was walking to school, somebody tried to take her. It was one of the Nazis, and they had said, you know, you need to come with us. And my grandmother said, great-grandmother said, no, if she goes, I'm going with her. Well, they let her go. So after that, when it started the bombing and it became more apparent that more Nazis were in the area, the nuns actually had some of the Nazis come to the school, and they hid my mom in a coffin to protect her and not be seen. And since that whole experience, my mom has had claustrophobic experiences. She cannot go in an elevator or a closed space. And I always thought, well, it doesn't transfer over, but it does, because I had to have an MRI not too long ago in the past 4 years. And the minute they put me in that tube, I felt like I couldn't breathe, like I was dying, and I screamed, and I said, you have to take me out, you have to stop, and I literally ripped off the IV and ran out of the room. And so it does transfer over.
So what's really interesting here about what Carmen just said, and I'm going to confirm this along with what she said. Now, I know many of you right now are saying, well, I'm claustrophobic too, but I've never ever had that type of experience or whatnot. I just saw on TV, like you can believe everything on TV, but in this particular case, there was a study done, and this was just recent, by the way, on the Holocaust genetic transferring of these genes from somebody who has actually been a part of or affected by the Holocaust back in the day. And what they concluded, and I was going to bring this up to Carmen anyway, if she even recognized in herself some of these traumatic events or some of the things that affect a person. Believe it or not, they came down to the conclusion. I can't remember how many people they actually studied, but it was several. And yes, the answer is the offspring of those survivors or not survivors of the Holocaust do have in their genetic makeup. Now, I'm not going to conclude that everybody does, but they concluded that a good portion, majority, do. They have some of the end traumatic results in their genetic makeup affecting them to this day on what occurred back in the day. And I would almost guess that it's not just the Holocaust, but any other traumatic civil war situation or anything that ended with a tremendous battle and loss of life anywhere, I would bet most people may not even realize sometimes that what could be inside themselves genetically could also be the result of what had happened back then. So I'm actually very glad that you picked up on that, Carmen. Even though I can't stand being in tubes either, and I have to practically be, you know, hit me over the head and knocked out, and I fight to every living thing to have to go in those MRI, cylinders.
like most people have to when you're getting things done. But I understand that it probably affected you a little bit more. And when I met you a year ago, and then we started sharing our experiences about all the paranormal and the things that have happened to us, and you know, I had begun to wonder even back then, because I think you briefly mentioned something about your mother being a Holocaust survivor. I think, you know, I was sitting here thinking even back then, I wonder what the effects have been on her since that time. And since your mom is still alive, and of course, we all know, most of us know, that not all of our parents will disclose to us, especially our grandparents, things of the past, because it's either brings up a lot of you know, unsettled reactions, depression, memories that are long, that need to be long forgotten, more horrific than a person can even imagine. And sometimes the older generation, I don't want to pick on the older generation, a lot of times they just kind of grew up very stoic and more silenced. And so for just the fact that you're getting anything out of her now or within the last 4 or 5 years, I think is remarkable. One of the things we were talking about was, you know, the identity portion of her. And we were talking about her birth date and all that. What did she tell you regarding her birth date, you know, or knowledge about how, what her day of birth was and all that? What do you know about that?
Well, I know one thing. The reason she's, what Dr. Kelly said is so true. My mom said the memories were just so painful, she couldn't even talk about it, and only recently is able to. But even her birthday, you know, she is so active and feeling so young. She doesn't use a walker, she doesn't use a cane, she doesn't take the elevator, so she climbs 3 flights of stairs to get to her apartment in a regular apartment building. She doesn't want to live in the other building with the older people or more seasoned people.
Yes, more seasoned. And she's what, 89 years old?
89 years old. Mm-hmm. But she said, you know, I don't even know if my birth date is accurate. All the records were either burned or lost. And she said, I have the same birthday as one of my aunts, and I find that odd. And then she said, I think I'm much younger than what I am told I am. And so she said, most of those records were destroyed because they didn't want to have a history of really what happened. And what I'm finding out from other Holocaust survivors, it wasn't just Jewish people, it was Polish, it was women, it was people from Canada, people from Mexico, Ukrainians, big time. And what I'm saying is that these people said if their records are destroyed, then they never existed. And so, like the Russians and the Germans can say, well, this never happened. And there are many people who are attesting to this and saying this is really true. There's no record of our existence. And that's where this is coming from. I know lately there's a movement, and one of the people is actually a professor, I believe, in England, who says it never happened. But that is not true. It did happen. I know many survivors. I know a teacher in Poland who is probably my mother's age, who showed me his legs. They have scars on them from being beaten, from being against this movement of, you know, he said that anti-Semitism was so great at the time. If you did not believe in that, they would beat you. They would throw you in a concentration camp. I have dear Ukrainian friends that actually have numbers on their arms that were in the concentration camp. They also took my mom and my grandma eventually and put them in the camp. But they were, at that time, it was very close to the war ending when the Americans came over. And so my grandma and mom were actually saved, but they were caught for keeping Jewish children in the home, and that's why they ended up in the concentration camp.
Was this over? This was over in Germany, right?
Yes.
So because they were out of the kindness of their hearts, trying, and they had what they believed were Jewish children in the home.
Yes.
How did they go about? Did she ever, your grandmother ever talk about, or your mother, not even just your grandmother, your mother ever talk about how the one thing that was really fascinating is you said they put her in a coffin to try to hide her. Okay, now people right now are saying this. Where did she get the coffin from? Who made the coffin?
Well, apparently what it was, the church had a school attached to it. The kids were in the school. Even the Jewish children went to the Catholic school, so no one would know that they're really Jewish. And my mom had the very dark hair. Many Germans have dark hair. Not every one of them is blonde and blue-eyed. But anyway, the coffin was, someone had died, apparently, and the funeral had been in the church. And I know this sounds horrible, but my mom did tell me that actually there was a body in the coffin with her. And so that's why she is so freaked out. I'm sorry, but this is horrible. And she also had to walk out of a movie called The Pianist, because there was a scene there where an older gentleman was thrown from the balcony in a wheelchair, and my mom said I had actually witnessed that. And so my mom ran out of the theater crying. I was crying. The next day, my mom had blotches of red, big blotches all over her body. She went to the doctor, and he said, this is caused by trauma. Now, my mom doesn't know how to say the word for it, but I think it's called urticaria, and it's something that happens when people have been traumatized in their past, and when they relive some of this traumatized events, they will break out in these big blotches. And my mom gets them every time anything is on TV or in the movies about that time period. In fact, I even feel it. Whenever I see anything about the Holocaust, I just began crying. Last May, I had gone to Europe and actually visited Auschwitz. And I saw all the list of people that were in that concentration camp. And my whole family was with me. And we all just sat on a rock and we began bawling. I couldn't even go out to the field where some of the executions happened. They said they would just line them up and execution style, shoot them in the head. And then just drop them in this, like a ravine, and then they'd be buried there. And it was women, children, and men. And this just, I can't even talk about it. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay. Sorry, Carmen. So what's interesting, Carmen, is that both you and I were at that concentration camp in Auschwitz. And one of the things that I saw when I was there, well, for those of you here who haven't had the opportunity yet to go to Poland to see Auschwitz or Birkenau, you can't even begin to wrap your head around the fact that over 1 million plus people were incinerated on the ground there, and that the ground consisted of their ashes. And so, you know, when my husband and I went there, I would say within the last 5 years. I mean, time is now just rolling by and I can't remember anymore. One of the things when we walk through the gates is, of course, is that you're very quiet. And usually you're with a tour guide, usually. And then you're usually with somebody as they're parading you through this camp, and it's very, very clean. So one of the things that people do not understand really well is that you're walking through what is now a very clean looking museum of something that happened in the past. But if you were to actually see the actual pictures of what it looked like there in the past, your emotions and your thoughts would go to a very different place. And so one of the most two compelling places that we were brought to, we of course were brought into this one building, and they had pictures on the walls, just pictures and pictures and pictures of those that were held in this camp. And I do remember to this day, and I can't get her out of my mind, this woman who looked right into the camera, and you could just basically see right into her soul. It was so shocking to me to have to see that face, because you knew a very short period of time afterwards, you know, that she was killed. And just the tricks that they did to get them into, quote unquote, we're going to take a shower, only to find out that they're dropping cans of poison or whatever they did, and then they would incinerate them very short period of time after, and some of them probably were still alive. I mean, they didn't care whether they're dead or alive. And then the other thing that I noticed there, of course, they'll bring you into a room that has a large, it looks like a glass vase kind of thing, but it's huge. And they still have in there, they went and they scraped out a lot of the ashes that were existent even back in the day. And then they basically pulled them all together. And then you'd walk around this table and you just go, look, you know, you just kind of look at it. You don't even know what to think. You're seeing shoes. You're seeing, but not just shoes. You're seeing mountains of shoes. You're seeing hair. You're seeing eyeglasses. You're seeing people's personal effects. You're seeing everything. And I know that they've tried to expand this Holocaust Museum out to other places so that those who can't get over to Poland can at least have or see a little bit of what it may look like then. So what you're telling me, Carmen, is your mother actually managed to escape being a prisoner, right?
Yes.
Because a lot of these people, like I said, if they left it in the conditions of which these people lived, it probably would hit somebody a little bit more than going into a very cleaned up situation. So your mom, okay, so now that she's 89, supposedly 89 years old, could be younger than that actually. I assume she doesn't talk about this very much, but what other things has she shared with you about the movement? She had just escaped going into a concentration camp with your great-grandmother, correct?
Yes, correct.
And so how did she ever express to you how that might have felt, liberated or anything, or just any emotion at all, or pretty much emotionless?
Pretty much emotionless. Very painful for her to talk about it. In fact, when we first came here in the 1950s, they called all these people that left Germany, Poland, Ukraine, they called them DPs, displaced persons. Mm-hmm. On top of that, when I went to school in kindergarten, I didn't speak a word of English. I was made fun of, and when my parents came to conference, they didn't want to speak any foreign language. They totally wanted to be Americans. Mm-hmm. My dad came here with my mom and my two aunts with no money, just the clothes on their back. In fact, they were so poor that my mom wore the woolen winter suit that she came with from Germany and France all year round. She wore it in the summer, and I even have a picture of her in the springtime or summer in Loring Park in Minneapolis, and she's wearing that woolen suit, but I have a little cotton dress on, sleeveless. And when I got to school, I didn't speak for 2 years, maybe three. Finally, in second grade, I began to speak. But when my parents came to school with my grandmother and she, great-grandmother, and she spoke German, the kids said, oh, they're Nazis. Then they switched to speaking Russian because my parents spoke seven languages. Being so close to the other countries, wherever they went to work, they learned the language. Well, my parents came here, they went to West High School to learn English, and they all passed their citizenship tests, including grandma and my two aunts. But then they spoke a little Russian, and right away the kids said, "They're communists. Do you have a red phone at home?" And I said, "No. Why are you saying that?" And so I came home and told my parents. And at that point, they said, "We're never speaking the foreign language again." But I did grow up hearing that language till second grade. And so now I can remember it. When I hear it, I know what people are talking about and I can speak it. But every time I heard, I didn't want any relationship with being German or Russian or even Ukrainian. So I just told everybody I'm American and I didn't want to have anything to do with being a German with a German background, because every time I saw anything about the war, as a child even, I would just break down and cry, and I said I'm American. I even told some people I was a different nationality because I didn't want to be German.
You know, what's interesting about that is that actually right now, with even being American, some of you out there can relate to what I'm saying. You know, when I travel and stuff, I always tell everybody I'm from Canada. And the reason why I tell everybody this is that years ago, I think it was 1989 to 92, something like that, I was over in Yugoslavia. Or at least now I believe it's not called Yugoslavia anymore. But I actually went over there when the Civil War had just broken out, and I was not really aware that there was a Civil War going on to begin with. I went over on a tour. And so I do recall how people felt about Americans, because when I got on this tour and we traveled around, we had my hotel room was bombed the day after I left it. We fled the country. We went to the back roads, got stopped by the militia or the policemen. They came on, scared the bejeebies out of everybody, and all I could see was my dying in this bus out in the middle of nowhere trying to escape the country of, I believe, Yugoslavia. And so I also know that back then we were told by the tour people, do not speak. You do not say a word of English to anybody. Right now you have basically a target on your head. And so I learned very quickly, as someone who, even as a tourist, that I was not protected. So I understand, Carmen, you know, just the idea that when you want to erase part of your identity, just for your own safety, you know, to not be, have somebody react towards you in a way that you wish they would not react towards you. This is something that's actually very powerful to the core. And so did this, when this happened with you and you were basically kind of trying to tell people you're from somewhere else, was this happening in Minneapolis, or did you live in a country over there before you came to the U.S.?
No, this was happening in Minneapolis.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, in Minneapolis, actually in northeast Minneapolis, which had a lot of immigrants, but in the area we lived in, we had a large Swedish population, we had many Italians, we had Irish people, we had probably very... Northeast Minneapolis was very multicultural, and we all got along. But when I first came to school, the talk was, okay, she's either a Nazi or she's a communist. And that made me really shut down and be afraid to go to school. In fact, I didn't read. One time the teacher made me miss a field trip because I wouldn't talk, and so they everybody got to go on the field trip, and I had to stay in the principal's office like I did something wrong. And one time when I did speak, because I had a bloody nose, the teacher pinched me and pulled me by my cheek and told me never to do that again. So I felt not welcome in school at all.
So the question I would have for you after all this is, when you guys... I need to back up. Were you born in the U.S.? Or
no. Where were you born? I was born in Freiburg, Germany. And it was where they make the cuckoo clocks. And I do believe that when my mom was actually in that coffin and she was 9 or 10 years old, I don't think they were in Freiburg at that time. They were in a larger city. And my mom did not clarify that to me because I believe Freiburg, Germany, was untouched by the war. So I don't know exactly. It's something I still have to ask my mom, but she will only give you bits of the information at a time because she gets overwhelmed. And she gets anxiety, I can tell, and then we have to stop.
Interesting, very interesting. Did you say that she's in touch with or still knows some of the other Holocaust survivors from back then?
Yes. We have a friend living here in the Twin Cities who actually wrote a book about the Ukrainian people that were in the concentration camps. And this friend of ours, both she and her mother were in the concentration camp. And she has a fascinating book. It's a short read. I have a copy at home, but I'm sorry, I don't remember the title of the book.
No, that's okay. I suppose if someone published that and they Googled that, probably on Amazon or in some of these places, and I would assume that it has something to do with the Holocaust listed. Most people, if they're going to make a connection like that, will put that at least somewhere in the subtitle or the title, so that way people can see what's available out there. But, you know, once in a while we will see on television some of these Holocaust survivors. I am just amazed at although your mom did not end up, thank God, in a concentration camp, I don't even know if you would be here to this day if that had even happened. But one thing that Carmen did bring up, and it is a study that is going on and has gone on and probably will still go on, is the fact that the effects of that Holocaust, like anything that's horribly traumatic, is still felt to this day in those survivors, even as, of course, offspring. And so, Carmen, you probably have some of this in your genetics, and only when you're tested with it, like you were mentioning earlier, causing you a little bit more anxiety than you wish, you probably thought at first, why am I feeling this way? Why am I reacting this way? And of course, many of us, we don't look to questioning how far back some of these effects may actually go. We just know we're born and we have environmental experiences and we go from there. And basically we always think that it's just all, we are created from our circumstances and our environment and our upbringing. But do we ever look closely enough at going way back? Not always, because we just don't have a tendency to question that. So now that you're in a place with your mom where you might be able to maybe occasionally slip out a question or two, what kind of questions do you have that you would still like to ask your mom?
Well, I am just amazed how strong of a woman my mom is, that she survived all this. And I know I did ask her at some point, you know, other people go through a trauma and they just end up being depressed. They turn to alcohol and drugs, and you never did. How I'd like to ask her what she did to survive. And at one time I did ask her, Mom, I'm just amazed. And she said, I just never wanted to relive that again. So I always thought I'm going to be different. I'm going to change. I'm not going to go back to what was. And so she's very progressive and very positive person. She is a worrier, though. She worries anytime someone doesn't answer the phone. She thinks something tragic happened. And my mother-in-law, actually, who was part Jewish, she was Ukrainian Polish and had a Jewish parent, she was even more worrisome than my mom. She would worry about anything and everything, and was basically, when I met her, I just felt like you could tell she went through a lot, and also, like, my mom was very tight-lipped. None of them talked about it. I even found out that at my church, half of the people are actually part Jewish, and the reason they turned to Christianity or that religion is that it was the only way to hide from what they had been in the past, and they didn't want to go back to that and never suffer like that again. So they started becoming Christian and going to a Christian church. I even have people at my church that will have a Star of David or numbers on their arms, like a tattoo, and they're survivors. And I can't tell you, when I see those people, I just have to start to cry.
Well, the one thing that I'm wondering about here, Carmen, is for those individuals that are at your church that have numbers on them, did you say that those were the numbers that were tattooed on them by the concentration camps? And so did they have these numbers on them as they were children or babies? Because right now they must be fairly old.
Probably. I would say so. My mom said that the Nazis didn't regard them as human beings. She said we were herded into a place like cattle. They treated us like we were not human. And they lied to us. Oh, you're going to go take a shower. And those people would never come back. But my mom said they were a little bit more, I guess, sensitive to children. Not all the Nazis were bad. My mom says that, like, my mother-in-law was actually saved by a German soldier. They tried to take her away. He grabbed her, threw her on the ground, and was passionately kissing her. And when they said, "Who are you with?" this German soldier said, "I'm with my fiancé." So he basically saved my mother-in-law's life. And my mother-in-law said she'll never forget that, and that he told her he did not want to be a Nazi, but being in that time in Germany, you were forced to be a Nazi.
Isn't that interesting? I mean, as you were sitting here telling me about that, so he threw her on the ground, and probably a young kid or whatever, and just passionately started kissing her, and that was the way that essentially he saved her.
Yes.
So there is some human decency out there after all. I can't even begin to imagine what that moment, and he not only saved her, he put himself at great risk if anything would have surfaced regarding the fact that he was now kissing someone being a Jewish descent. I find that to be absolutely fascinating. Well, I wish, honestly, that your mom and of course you and your family can continue to process this out in the best ways that you can. It's a difficult situation. It's traumatic. It still is everlasting. If they say you'll forget about it, most people in trauma never forget about it. We all know that. But I am absolutely grateful to have interviewed you today regarding this, and thank you. I know some of these segments or, you know, moments are kind of touch and go here, but the thing is, the emotion is still raw years and years and years later. In fact, I don't even know how many years later, but, you know, what is it, since 1942 or 5? 42 or 5? Yeah, I mean, think about that. Most of us here haven't even, we're not even around yet, to even begin to wonder how we've gotten to this point in our society. So on that behalf, I am going to do another interview with Carmen here, but we're going to talk ghostly activity now. And I think that you're going to be very interested in that segment, and that segment will come after this one. So, Carmen, are there any final words that you would like to say?
Well, I would just like to say that, believe me, this did happen. I have another short little story to tell. My husband was born in 1948, right after the war. There was no food available. The store shelves were empty. My mother-in-law said she had to make soup out of the grasses and the weeds in the yard, and that my husband was not a preemie baby. He was actually full term 9 months, but when he was born, he weighed 3 pounds. But today he's very healthy looking and he's 6'4".
Well, that's what I call him, a survivor too. How fascinating though,
yes,
to have made soup out of the grasses outside of their home. And that was just a couple years after,
yeah,
after that. And my God.
Yeah.
I mean, you always think they're only eating potatoes. I don't think so. I think even being in a concentration camp, I'm sorry, I highly doubt that they were eating steak and potatoes there.
No.
It was probably the worst, grossest stuff you could even imagine on the planet, treating them.
Yeah, there was actually a famine in the Ukraine. Just like the Irish, they had a famine, potato famine, wheat famine. The Russians, I'm sorry if I offend any Russian people, but the communist Russians took the food that the farmers grew and sent it all to Russia and removed it from Ukraine. And Ukraine was known as the wheat basket or the bread basket of Eastern Europe. And at that time, there was no wheat for the Ukrainian people. And that's why my mother-in-law commented that she made the soup from the grasses and the weeds in the garden.
Absolutely fascinating. Well, thank you, Carmen, very much for being with us on our program today. Like I said, I'm going to be doing another interview with Carmen here shortly, and it'll be completely on our paranormal experiences, which I think you're going to find to be as interesting. And I hope that you learned something from this interview today. I have wanted this interview for a very long time, and I hope that you've appreciated it and you can really think about some of the things that she said. Thank you, Carmen, for being our guest today.
Thank you, Dr. Kelly. I'm so glad we did this interview. That way we can make people aware that the Holocaust did happen, and not to question it when people come up with a story that it was all made up, because it wasn't. And I feel the pain that my mother felt.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And again, on behalf of Paranormal Encounters podcast series, I wish you a good day and stay tuned for the next episode as we talk to Carmen about our paranormal experiences. Good night, everyone.
Thank you for joining us this evening. Dr. Schutz welcomes your emails and paranormal stories. Visit her website at www.paranormaluniversalpress.com for contact information, or go to amazon.com to view her books searching under Paranormal Encounters. Thanks for listening. Take care. And until next time,
be careful what you wish for.
The script, vocal talent, and music compositions in this podcast program are copyrighted. As a disclaimer, this podcast episode or parts thereof may not be reproduced, reposted, or transmitted in any form without the express permission from the producer and company, Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, or Para-X Radio Network. Any opinion or claim made in any podcast episode by the host or guest does not necessarily represent the viewpoints of Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, Para-X Radio Network, or its sponsors. Properties mentioned in any podcast are publicly known to be haunted or have been discovered to have unexplained occurrences. If you are a ghost seeker, please take precautions and respect people's properties by not trespassing.
Be careful what you wish for.
My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the producer and host of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. I am a published author, academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast who holds 4 advanced degrees with an interest in parapsychology and life after death issues. I have written about and encountered nearly 100 situations involving the paranormal, with my most frightening experience being a floor-length mirror cycling around in front of me in a haunted room I had stayed in. I invite you to tune in Thursday evenings at 11 o'clock p.m. to 12 midnight Eastern Standard Time right here on the Para-X Radio Network.
Did I hear somebody come in?